as far as good looking guys on that show goes, I think he's even better looking than Sam Reed. That is a really, really pretty handsome man.
Hang on.
Right?
Wow. Mark. Well, now we know what your type is, Mark.
Well, I don't know if it's my, I mean, certainly not my type, okay, but I'm just saying, I'm always struck by like how sharp his cheekbones and
his features
are very delicate and his teeth are like radioactive. So I say he is sizzling, but not maybe in the sense that you mean.
Okay. Well, thanks, Mark, for that.
Greetings and welcome to Vampire Insider, an unofficial podcast dedicated to recapping and reacting to AMC's new TV series that reimagines Anne Rice's Interview with the Vampire, part of the Immortal Universe. In each episode, hosts Joanne Palumbo, Christina LaRusso, and myself, Mark Snedeker, summarize the episode, talk about Easter eggs, discuss standout characters, interrogate inconsistencies between the book and the series, dissect our favorite characters and their arcs, and provide a body count. Please join us now as we dive into episode 6, Like Angels Put in Hell by God. I would like to now welcome my fellow podcasters. Hello, Christina LaRusso.
Hi, Mark Snedeker. Hey, Joanne Palumbo.
Hi, Christina. Hi, Mark.
Ladies, let's talk about our hot take on episode 6.
It was a very important episode. Not only did it go into the emotional and mental abuse aspect of Louis and Lestat's relationship, and it also, you know, moved the story forward with Claudia wanting to leave and, you know, built the foundation for what's going to happen next with Lestat. But it did answer a couple of our questions about whether or not the sexual assault occurred and if the domestic violence was, you know, recounted the way, well, I guess we don't know yet if it was recounted the correct way, but Louis didn't seem to dispute it from Claudia's account in her diary. So it really all seems to come together. And that's really disappointing because I think the writers could have done a little bit better than using that as a way of showing Claudia that the world is tough. But here we are. And overall, though, another great episode. And I'm super excited for the finale.
It is a good episode. I liked the episode, but there was something that I was struggling with. And it came to me that the problem wasn't the episode. The problem was with the way I was thinking about this show. And I have to reconfigure the way that I think about this show. And it was been right in front of me the whole time because Rollin Jones said he really wants to do a show about a toxic relationship. And he's doing that.
I mean, there's no doubt about that.
But I kept
more than one.
I kept wanting to put this into the box of being a show about a vampire's existential crisis. And in some ways it is, but it really is much more relationship focused. And so when I rewatched it from that perspective, I thought, okay, I get it. These guys are going to answer the question that often is asked of domestic abuse survivors or victims. And that is, why do you stay or why do you go back? Once I changed my lens and I watched it that way, I thought, okay, this is a really hard to watch, but also brilliant episode. And Joanne, I share, of course, the same concerns you do about the sexual assault, and I will be talking about that later as well. Mark, what about you?
I totally agree with you that that is clearly becoming even more of the focus as we move into the series. I thought that it was really going to be more about how difficult it is to be a vampire. And it still definitely does address that. I don't know that the argument that was it necessary is the correct one. It's how did they deal with it? Where do you think they're coming from? Where's their perspective coming from? Are they coming from, you know, a thoughtful, healthy place, or is it just purient? We don't know. I don't know yet how that, how some of these more controversial issues are going to weave themselves into the tapestry of the story. But in general, I mean, Lestat is all the Lestat you could want. They're going to make it really hard for you to stand Lestat, and they should. As much as he was somewhat rehabilitated in, you know, in the second novel, he's still not a good guy. And that doesn't mean Louis's a good guy either. I mean, Louis has his problems, but Lestat was never a good guy. You can still find him charming and entertaining and all those things because it's a TV show.
Now would be a good time to maybe talk a little bit about book versus show. In this episode, I thought something happened that was fascinating, and I wonder if any of you picked up on it. Because
I think one watching
where before I thought the burning of the tapes was the break, I think we have really reached the point.
This is the extra break.
This is a real break, because in the episode, you have Louis say to Daniel, "Here is where you asked me during our in San Francisco to give you the dark gift."
Right.
And that ended the interview, because when Daniel, he bit him. He bit him, and then Louis took off, right? And Daniel then wakes up later. But much more of the story has been told to Daniel in the book than has been told up to now. So Daniel, the only story Daniel knew ends with this episode. Everything else after this is going to be all new news to Daniel. Daniel hasn't heard.
Oh, right, because the interview story stopped
when Louis attacked him.
Right.
The end, and he says, "And we tried to kill Lestat," and Louis was waiting for some big reaction from Daniel, and then he had to repeat himself, and then he realized that Daniel had fallen asleep. So here marks the end of what Daniel at least knows. We, as an audience or people who've read the book, know what sort of to expect.
Christina, would you say that it's the final nail in the coffin?
I mean, if you want to get smacked, yeah.
I think it is, Joe.
When I see you on Wednesday, I'm punching you
on the nose. Oh, my God. When I see you on Wednesday, I'm punching you on the nose.
Okay.
It'd basically be a brawl there in New Orleans.
So really a lot has changed between book and show at this point. Mostly was that there was this breakup, this multiple year breakup with Lestat and Louis going their own way.
Right.
And Claudia nursing Louis back to health. That's a big difference. And I really liked this story arc. I like how they took it. I like the direction that they took it.
And there's a considerable amount of time, 6 years.
Well, and I think that does a couple of things, right? It shows that Louis at least made the attempt to break it off. For vampires, 6 years, 7 years, whatever it's going to be, is like, you know, a 3 month break, right?
I mean, not even.
It's not. Yeah, it's a pretty brief break, but I think it does dramatically illustrate the division between them. And then it gives Louis, quote unquote, enough time to start to weaken. And some of the love bombing starts to work a little bit. You know, there are still threads from the book that are woven into this current story. So we get a little bit, a peek into Lestat's origin story.
Right. So you're getting Vampire Lestat.
That's
right. The second book. Yeah.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
You're getting the second book.
That's right. He tells the truth that, you know, Magnus was his maker and he dragged him from Paris, left him underground with the rotting corpses. That was directly from the book. And did he dance in the fire? He sure did.
Let's take a pause now and hear from our sponsor for Easter Egg of the Week, Lestat Industrial.
Where garbage collects, rats congregate, and infection breeds. The problem can waylay even the most formidable municipalities. We at Lestat Industrial carry a wide range of incinerators designed to meet your waste disposal needs, large or small. Inquiries can be made via U.S. mail or by telephone at TR6-5000. After hours appointments are encouraged. This is New Orleans. We don't wake up till the sun goes down.
All right. So for Easter egg of the week, I did find a callback to episode one. It is the name of the song that Lestat wrote for Louis, which was "Come to Me." If you recall in episode one, when Louis was in the funeral procession for his brother Paul and Lestat was sending him those messages or whatever, he was saying, "Come to me, come to me." And that was the name of the song that he recorded with his whore, Antoinette, for Louis.
That was a lot, wasn't it? I mean, what a provocation. It was a beautiful gesture. The song and the sentiment of the song is beautiful, but it was very premeditated. He knew that is exactly what would get Louis's attention. Lestat in this episode is so toxic. He does everything that people warn you to.
Well, this was the emotional abuse portion of it. Last week we got the physical. This week was the emotional, and it was frightening.
Well, it's this, it's just this love bombing. It's, I love you so much, Louis. I'm nothing without you. He shows up with the Rolls Royce and says, you know, I'm nothing without you. And Louis blows him off.
He
wears him down over time. And what's interesting is that you guys both said time really means nothing to them.
It means less.
It means less. Okay. But to me, I would think for an immortal, time is just never ending. I think it's hard to live that life as an immortal. Well, that's a good one, Joanne. And I didn't catch that, but I liked that.
Yeah, I thought that was a little interesting.
Good one.
Thanks, Mark.
So I have two.
Okay.
Easter eggs. So Christina noticed this one, and then I followed up and did some research on it. It was a kind of an orange abstract, or actually a surreal triptych, three paintings in a row. They're by Francis Bacon. This particular one is usually referred to as Three Studies for Figures at the Base of a Crucifixion. This was released right at about at the end of World War II and was definitely influenced by Bacon's feelings about the Holocaust. Why that's interesting is that we know that they go to France in the late 40s when there are still prisoners of war in Eastern Europe. You can say, okay, well, they also picked up a little bit of artwork when they were there.
I also noticed the triptych, and I was curious about the subjects. I think that the background of it, and especially since they mentioned Ploiești multiple times.
Yeah.
Remember, if we go back to a couple of episodes ago, we were talking about Claudia's diary, and one of the entries was from Ploiești, where she says they're feeding on the prisoners of war. Okay, so definitely there's some war stuff wrapped up in this. These are really abstract looking anthropomorphic creatures. The one on the left is kind of sitting on a chair with its head down, and it's got a floppy head of hair, and it's just not looking. You can't see its face at all. Then there's one in the middle who seems to be like on a table or something. And you can see its mouth, but it's also got kind of blindfold over its eyes. And then on the far right, the third image is this creature that is kind of bent over backwards with a long neck and a mouth that dominates the head, and the mouth is gaping open. I was thinking about, how do these represent, or do they represent each of the protagonists, Claudia, Louis, and Lestat? I kind of feel like the middle guy with the blindfold on his face is Louis.
Yeah. Right. He doesn't see the truth of Lestat. He doesn't see the truth of his own situation. He misses a lot, this Louis.
But the other two, I'm not sure. I don't know if Lestat is the guy with the gaping mouth. Probably, because Lestat is so...
He hungers.
He also doesn't stop to actually pay attention. I saw someone talking on Twitter today, and I can't remember who it is, so I apologize for not attributing this to the right person. But someone on Twitter said, people want to give Lestat a lot more credit about scheming. Lestat is not a scheming type of person. Lestat kind of bumbles into things. Yeah. Remember a couple of episodes ago, I said that Lestat's not a very good teacher.
Oh, he's terrible.
He's a very bad teacher of vampirism. That is because Lestat is too much about Lestat. And that's what that figure on the right in the triptych kind
looks
of
like to you. Yeah.
Means to me. And then the other one with the head down, like thinking in and introspective, I would say that's maybe Claudia, who is actually the one that's scheming. You wouldn't expect it from that one.
Right.
Or maybe you would, because she's just sitting there with her head down and she's concentrating and she's thinking. That's what that kind of represents to me. And I keep thinking about them as a trio. Remember earlier too, in one of the episodes the one about the book, I talked about them being the ego, the superego, and the id.
Oh, yeah, you did.
Triangles on triangles here.
It is. And this is definitely a drama triangle. It's a very toxic bond. And then there's one other thing that I wanted to point out. When they go to the flashback of Daniel in San Francisco, the scene as they come in over San Francisco is the scene from the movie. That's the opening.
I did notice it, but you did point it out to me. So the first time I watched it, I just didn't see it. When I watched it again, because I was like, how did I miss that? And you know what caught my eye? The stupid fish that said Mary's in it. And I was like, oh, Polynesian Mary's.
Yes.
And I can't seem to hold two thoughts at the same time. And I completely missed that it was the scene from one of my favorite movies. Because I saw a fish and was like, oh, fishy.
So here's my final Easter egg.
Okay.
So it's a great scene between Claudia and Lestat, where they're playing chess for what was probably like the 500th time.
And I mean, it was belabored, though, this scene. I felt like, what are we watching now? Are we back in?
Oh, this is important.
I know it is, but I also was like, here we are, and it's Queen's Gambit.
No, it's okay. Not anything like that. So they've played hundreds of games between each other, and Lestat crushes her every time. Not surprising, right? He's been playing chess for whatever, 700 years or something, but she's learning. Of course, he's not a gracious winner. So then we see their final game that they play, and he's really ridiculing her for her strategy. He's like, oh, the Dutch defense, you know, of course, you know, it's very defensive looking. And then she starts sacrificing pieces. And he's like, are you just sacrificing pieces to stave off the inevitable? And then she traps him. She checkmates him because he's taken all these pieces, but it's set up this checkmate. And of course, she actually just takes it to the brink of checkmate. He sees that it's going to be checkmate. She knows that it's checkmate and she walks away.
She won't finish the game.
That was amazing.
It turns out that the game she played is very similar to a very famous historical chess game played in 1928, we think, and it was played in Warsaw. It is called, interestingly enough, Polish Immortal. The strategy behind Polish Immortal, and really the only kind of player it works on, are players who are just greedy and hungry. They want to take everything. They want to destroy you. They don't want to just win. They want to take all your shit, steal your lunch money, rub your nose in the dirt, and then celebrate over your prone body. And this is the kind of player that can be trapped by this particular strategy. So this is important. Moving on, because now, first of all, we see Claudia's figured some shit out about Lestat, right? She figured out how to beat him in chess. And of course, chess is always all in any TV show, movie, book where chess is, it's always a metaphor for life or some life struggle. So she has figured out how to beat him. And the way she does it is by trapping him with his own greed. And we know that Lestat has no impulse control. As Christina said, he doesn't really have this big master plan. He's just kind of following his appetites where they go.
That big gaping mouth of that creature in the triptych.
Exactly right. Mm-hmm. So she's going to jam some chess pieces down that big gaping mouth. Of course, now we're talking about, we're starting to get closer and closer to the attempt on Lestat's unlife. She says, I know how to kill him.
Do you think in some way Claudia is going to end up using Antoinette?
Something is going to happen with Antoinette.
Yeah.
I saw something today that made me think something is afoot. I saw a scene where Antoinette is dressed in a black suit as a man. We also see a scene, Louis and Claudia are standing outside. Maybe they're looking into the incinerator or whatever. Someone is burning alive in the incinerator. Now, yeah. I think that a lot of people think that that was Lestat, but it could have been Antoinette, and maybe Antoinette is going to be Lestat's soft spot. Something is going to be, I wouldn't be surprised if something is going on with Antoinette. Okay, one last thing that I do want to bring up, and that is the self-help book, essentially, that Louis is reading.
That's a good one.
Called Love's Coming of Age, a series of papers on the relations of the sexes by Edward Carpenter. Edward Carpenter was kind of an interesting character in the sort of late 19th century, early 20th century. So Louis reading this is essentially him going through like the personal growth section after a breakup, you know, instead of men are from Mars and vampires are from Venus. We've got this kind of literature. Now, Edward Carpenter was way ahead of his time. Yeah. He was theorizing things about the value of monogamous marriage and talking about how in marriages, once you get into a marriage, you go into it thinking it's going to be one way and then it's not. You know, all of the bloom falls off the rose and it becomes this sort of drudgery marriage can be. Edward Carpenter was far ahead of his time on sexuality. He was far ahead of his time on women's liberation. It's an interesting thing that Louis, to me, is reading this book because it says to me that he was trying to get philosophical in his head during his convalescence with what the fuck just happened to me? Why was that? What was going on in this relationship? And I think, how could it have been better? How could I have done better? How could we have done better? And he's in this deep, deep, deep depression.
No doubt. Well, I mean,
well, come on.
That's his thing.
After what he went through, you know, so he was already depressed with Claudia gone. He is far more depressed now with Lestat and himself and like their breakup and all of the, and the terrible violence that he has suffered at Lestat's hand. So anyway, I thought it was an interesting book.
Was that late enough for Eat, Pray, Love to be available?
No, but he should have done, he could have gone
Bite, on, Bite, Pray, Love or something.
He could have gone on some Odyssey, but
You know, the highly effective habits of successful vampires.
I heard that Claudia sent Lestat a gift.
What?
It was a book that said, dude, he's just not that into you.
Yes.
See, these jokes
if
are
she had her way.
That's right. That's right. All right, Joe, you go first. Yeah. Who's your standout this week?
Okay, so I know last week it was Claudia, but it's Claudia this week as well. And here's why.
Way to switch things up.
Yeah, I thought I'd go a different route this week. And this is a testament to Bailey Bass, because I really enjoyed nurturing Claudia. And to go from Claudia, the collector of body parts and titties and everything else, to cleaning up the townhouse, serving Louis dinner, so to speak. She was phenomenal. And I bought every second of it. And it kind of brought me back to last week's, or not, was it last week or the week before, whenever it was that she initially left. And she said to Louis, you know, I'm never going to get the opportunity to have been a housewife, or maybe I could have had a husband and I could be cleaning and looking after my kids and nursing my babies. And it was almost like Louis became that for her in that moment. She wasn't technically nursing, but she was providing sustenance to him. She was cleaning up after him. She was responsible for, you know, getting him back on his feet. And I really did like seeing that. And I loved the little girlish charm she had and that glimmer of hope and excitement when she was in the back of the train and the conductor left. And she realized, you know, she wasn't going to get caught right then and there. And she was so giddy and so cute and so excited. And Lestat just came in like the asshole that he is in this episode and ruined it.
Like, say, a wrecking ball?
Wrecking ball.
Oh my God. This is so, this episode.
I'm definitely going to have to make a playlist.
Yeah. Yeah. We need a mixtape. Listen, you could send it to Christina and I, like Mark, like Lestat sent Come to Me to Louis.
Exactly. Except, you know, no, maybe don't think I'm as toxic as he is.
No. I just thought she was pretty cool this episode. You know, I'm crazy and I love the scheming and the plotting. So watching her devise her little plan and the total badass bitch move she pulled of walking away and being like, fuck you, I'm not finishing this game. That was just a total boss move. And I was here for it. So Claudia, fabulous.
All right. For me, I think it's going to be Lestat, because look, this episode is driven by Lestat's appetites and his toxicity and his attempts to win Louis back. So Louis is depressed. Why is he depressed? Because Lestat is gone. Claudia is now taking over as head of household. Why is that? Because Lestat is gone. They're creeping around looking into windows. Why is that? Well, see what Lestat is up to, right? She's escaped on the train. Oh, there's Lestat. So I think what we're starting to see here, well, not starting to see just now, obviously we've been seeing it all along, but we're really starting to see Lestat's toxicity just continue to bubble to the surface, even in a sense, almost more than his horrible, you know, beating of Louis, because now he's being disingenuous. I mean, when he was beating Louis, he was at least being honest about his feelings, as horrible as they were. Now he just wants to trick Louis into coming back and make him jealous and love bomb him and make sure Claudia doesn't leave, because he knows that'll also cause Louis to spiral even more. Lestat is really driving the bus here, and he sings. That's amazing. And, you know, we're starting to see kind of continuing hints of his rock and roll stardom, which I'm dreading more than anything. But maybe they'll handle that better than the book did. I don't know. It really was jarring.
I don't know why. It tickles really me that you're so upset about this.
Oh my God. I just don't love. I just think it's clumsy and it's dated.
Well, I'm assuming that the TV series is going to update this and make this much cooler.
I don't know. I hope
like
so.
Maybe he joins a boy band or something.
Bye, bye, bye.
Oh my God.
A new member of NSYNC.
Backstreet Boys Lestat.
Oh, yuck.
I know. Oh, I
can't. It's too late in the night for this.
Calm down. I agree. He had a hell of an episode. And actually, it was between Lestat and now my mine, who I'm going to choose. And everyone knows I'm going to choose Rashid. But I have to choose Rashid because I find him to be so fascinating.
Of course, because we know so little about him, but he's so magnetic. Present
because he's a mystery. So he's in the background, but he's not just in the background. He's serving as a servant, but he is not just a servant. We're all sitting here in the fandom going, well, he must, you know, maybe he's got to be somebody, he's got to be a vampire, whatever. I'm down this path on David, what some people think Armand. Rashid walks right through the sun. He walks right through things. So he didn't burst into flames. Okay, so then I was like, oh, geez, now what? Now he's not David, and I was dejected. And then at the end of the episode, you learn that he's been dreaming about the first night that he met Louis. He keeps waking up and before he gets asked to go back to his apartment. And so in this dream, Rashid shows up in
time. Do you know what I thought
when
I saw him? Because I was pretty surprised. I went, dun, 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 they'll never expect a vampire Rashid.
Can we talk about 70s Louis, though?
No, I know. Dude, oh,
he was pretty cool.
Pretty fly.
He was. Yeah. He was very hip. But here's what about Rashid that really made him stand out. He asked to be excused. And Louis said to Daniel, do you plan on hitting me again? And Daniel said, no. And then Louis said, okay, you can go. There's something about Rashid that is calming to Louis. There's some sort of, not control, but sort of calming presence or something that Rashid can exercise over Louis.
That's like his vampire superpower.
That could be. And that's what, I think that's what you said last week. And I think I cut that out, but maybe I'll leave it
How
in this.
How dare
week.
You?
I know. I have to make these decisions. It's not easy. We had 2.5 hours last week.
We had a lot of material.
The fact that I was able to cut that down to just an hour was astonishing to me. But okay, so that's mine. Absolutely.
Well, the characters were on point this week.
That's all of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So why don't we then talk a little bit about character arc.
I don't see why not.
So let's start with Louis, since no one talked about Louis in standout character.
Louis is not becoming a better and better man as we go through the show. I mean, it's pretty easy to track in this, right? He is depressed. He's upset. He made this big move to kind of try to distance himself from Lestat. And so he holds off for 6 years. Okay, that's a valiant effort, I suppose. But one change we do see in him is that he's now learned that his dietary choices are negatively impacting Claudia. They're making her feel bad about being a killer. Now, I don't necessarily believe Claudia when she said that. I don't think it really does make her feel bad, but Louis thinks it is. And he's now announced, we'll see if it's actually true, that he's going to change his entire vampiric philosophy because it's hurting the feelings of his companion. He's becoming even more dependent on Claudia rather than acting like a parent.
Well, her rule is that they can't. Yeah. They have to act like she's a sister.
Right. But she acts like a parent for a long, long time until they, you know, bring Lestat back into the fold. And then, of course, he falls victim to the love bomb and continues to make horrible, horrible excuses for Lestat.
So when Lestat brings Louis the Rolls Royce and he makes his speech to him about, you know, he's sorry, because that was really the first time he had been face to face with him in 3 years. And he said, this isn't you. You're not cruel. The way he said it, he didn't look at Claudia, but that's when Claudia threw the keys and dragged her nails down the side of the car. So she knew that that was directed towards her. As the viewer, I thought it was directed towards her more of, I think Lestat saw her as controlling everything with Louis and almost, you know, gatekeeping him.
Oh, for sure she is.
Yeah,
she is. And he does think that because he says so to Antoinette. Yeah, Louis in this, Louis is a pawn between this power struggle between Claudia and Lestat.
Was that a chess analogy?
It was a chess analogy. And I think so. Louis right now is not a person with a lot of autonomy in this situation. He thinks maybe he is. I think he believes that he is. I don't think that he realizes, again, that blindfold over that character's right. eyes in the triptych, right? I don't think that Louis sees very clearly what's happening. He later will find out, because of course we find out in the Claudia's diary that she didn't really prefer Louis as much as she thought he was much easier to control and manipulate. Claudia is manipulating both of them. I agree with you that her comment to about the blood and feeling or eating, feeding on humans. I don't think that she really cared, but she said she did. I think it was a test to see if she could get him to do what she wanted him to do. And she did. As soon as she said it, when Lestat said it, he kind of pushed back. As soon as Claudia said it, he jumped up and took off after that businessman.
That could be, she could be playing 3D chess here, because not only did she test to see if she was in control of Louis, but she's also siding with Lestat a little bit.
Yeah, like, she gave him a little.
Yeah, I'll ally with you on that. Yeah, I like eating people too. High five, bro.
And what about when he turns to her to try to talk to her after that and she like bad like a sheep?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
That was great.
He's sort of saying, I'm giving over all of this control to you. He's feeling restricted, you can tell by the rules in the household, but he wants to be in the household. So,
well, and I think it's pretty clear that Lestat is not really giving up control. He's pretending to cede it for a while, thinking he'll just get it back later.
Well, of course, because that's how these the power struggle works.
Absolutely.
So he lost control when he lost control. Then he had to do the love bombing to get Louis back in line. Yep. But he's also got Claudia to contend with.
Right.
So there's three different sides in the drama triangle. This is like a psychological trope, the Cartman drama triangle, to describe a toxic relationship. So there's a victim, a rescuer, and a perpetrator. And usually it's like two people that are involved in the drama triangle. But in this case, there are three of them. You don't ever stay at one place.
Yeah, you move around.
You move around. And so the power dynamic changes. Once you've lost the power, then you do everything you can in your control, or toxic people do, to regain that power. And remember back, we were talking about love bombing, and I said it's a tactic that is often used when someone has lost control or the power position in the relationship and they're trying to regain it. So they start trying to speak the other person's, the victim's love language.
Yeah.
Well, there's power in victimhood. Louis, sure, as a victim, has got power in this situation. And Lestat is coming and doing all of this love bombing and bringing gifts, trying to speak his love language, and eventually it works.
So as far as Louis goes, first of all, this guy's got an issue with doors, Christina. He shows up at Antoinette's house and just kicks the freaking thing in. And I'm just like, what's his problem with doors? Of course, you know, he turns to Lestat and he says, 6 years of begging, you think a song is going to get a rise out of me? And Lestat just looked like a kid on Christmas morning. He's like, did you like it? Mm-hmm. And shout out to the blankets. You know what I'm talking about.
Oh my God, Sam Reed. Call me.
Considerable.
Wow.
But no, it was just such a moment that like Lestat lit up like that. And he was like, you know, did you like it? And again, he's just such a selfish prick. And it just goes to speak to, you know, his state of mind, that it's all about him. And you know, Louis holds up the record and he's like, is this her singing? And, you know, Lestat asks him like, why are you wet? And he said, I swam the Mississippi to get here because I swim faster than I drive. But yeah, that's definitely was a classic moment. And that, you know, of course, led to their makeup sex, which was like, I'm going to give it to you and then I'm going to punch you in the face and then I'm going to give it to you and I'm going to stab you in the gut. Pretty fucked up moment.
Well, we know that Lestat is obviously much more powerful than Louis. So he allowed that.
Of course, he allowed that. Yeah, for sure. Well, he was getting the D. You know, you allow a little black. There's always room for something when you're getting it.
Speaking of getting the D, can we talk about Louis's absolute lack of boundaries when it comes to Claudia, allowing her to talk to him while he's having sex with Lestat?
How creepy. I was uncomfortable, and I'm usually not uncomfortable about many things.
To me, that's Louis has zero boundaries, but Claudia is so, like, she's in his head while they're having sex. That's a lot.
Talk about no boundaries. That's Claudia, no boundaries.
Right.
Yeah, ew.
That's because Louis has has no boundaries. Louis has to set the boundary. Claudia will step all over his boundaries, just like Lestat will step all over his boundaries. Louis is really a needy kind of, I can't understand his psychological profile. I don't get it.
Do you think really that it's because she didn't want Louis to enjoy it because she doesn't want him to have that
physical connection with Lestat.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's talking about we can get away. Now, the conceit in the show is that they are brothers and sisters at this point.
That's what she says.
And in the book, that's not it.
Okay. But would you take a phone call from one of your siblings while you're doing the nasty? No.
No, of course you wouldn't. But he allows it because he is so codependent on her. He just allows her to just overstep boundaries that are, it's unacceptable for her to do that. That was wild.
And again, one of the main themes is vampirism's effect on people. And it surprises me not one bit that being a vampire, among many other things, will tend to desensitize you to boundaries like that. Or of violence, sex, feeding on blood, all those things, it desensitizes them to those kinds of boundaries. And that doesn't make it good. It certainly isn't. Keep in mind, it's easy to think of Claudia as still being 16. She's not.
No, I mean, you're right. She's not. Full stop, she's not. But Louis doesn't realize that Claudia is in the mix here in a very manipulative way. She is extremely manipulative. And so I really feel like Louis is just kind of going through this blindfolded and not making very good choices.
Well, he's famous for that.
Exactly. This is a different Louis, right? This Louis has really gone down dark into a depression and is a very different Louis than the Louis we initially met.
I mean, his crises are starting to really come to a head, obviously with the increased violence. And now he's being dragged into a murder plot.
I wanted to kill Lestat and I also wanted him all to myself. Right.
Kind of like when he said, I wanted to be the man.
I wanted to be the man and I wanted to kill the man or something. He's very ambivalent when it comes to Lestat. Louis said something also interesting when he was talking to Claudia, because Claudia is saying to him, he's going to hurt you again. This is going to happen again. And Claudia is trying to speak to it with these clear eyes. And he's
scheming or not, that's 100% true.
This would continue. Lestat would hurt him again because that is a cycle in an abusive relationship. And despite the fact that Lestat came and said, well, I've changed, you know, no, he hasn't. He hasn't changed. Louis said, I see that we could be like him. If give us another 100 years, that Lestat has been through some stuff that made him into what he is. So he's trying to look for excuses for why Lestat is the way that he is. Claudia calls him out on that. And I would argue that that's also why he was reading that book by Carpenter. He's trying to figure out what the hell just happened.
Yeah.
So he's searching, and this is where his existential crisis is happening. So let's talk about Claudia.
Like I said earlier about Claudia, which was, you know, the reason why I chose her as my standout character was at the beginning of the episode, she's nurturing to Louis. She's looking out for him and doing all those things for him. And then as the episode begins to progress, we start to really see, well, is she really doing this for him or for herself? Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, it's really for herself because she is manipulative. That, like you said, you nailed it about when they're sitting on the bench. They talked about the way they feed, and he, you know, was never going to care how Lestat felt about his feelings about it. But the second Claudia said it bothered her, he couldn't get up to eat that guy fast enough. So she's really got her hooks into Louis and can make him do whatever it is she wants. And I loved how when they were playing chess and she said to him, I have a secret for you. It's that you want to kill him too.
Yeah.
She was manipulating the both of them simultaneously.
Absolutely. Well, and the race thing, which was accurate.
Yeah, about master and everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely accurate. You cannot argue with her that what Lestat does is very paternal. But the way that she was saying that, remember, Lestat couldn't hear what she was communicating. That was for Louis. And she was really berating him and saying, you're allowing yourself to be treated this way. It's a very cruel way. She's mocking him for not standing up for himself.
She was throwing everything against the wall to see what would stick.
And of course, Louis already had those kinds of feelings before, mm-hmm. right? So now she's just like hammering him with that whole referring to Lestat as master and complaining about how he's treating them as chattel.
I recognize that she's being manipulative. I recognize that at the point where Louis says to her, "You don't need me. You think you do, but you don't." And he is saying, just go on. You go. I can't go. I'm going to stay here, even though I know what I know, even though I know that he's still seeing Antoinette. Antoinette is not dead. He's lied to us about that. I'm going to stay here because this is just where I am. She takes off and she's going to go and do this. Now, here is where I have the problem. That rape was purely gratuitous and used as a method to curb Claudia from moving on. And the reason that I know that it's gratuitous is because all Claudia could think of in the previous episode where she's saying, who will be my partner? Who's going to fuck me? Claudia then goes out into the world to explore, not only educate herself, but also potentially to explore sexuality and do all of that. And she gets raped, which forces her back into this situation with Louis and Lestat. And now she just drops it. Now there's no interest whatsoever. She's not concerned about her body being young. That's not expressed at all in this episode. It just was purely used as a way to, number one, have an excuse to be so furious that she can kill Lestat. Instead of just having the anger and the frustration over being forever in a young, immature body, she now has to have this added thing that she was raped. And here's why else I think it was gratuitous, because the thing that Lestat does is mock her and taunt her with the fact that she was sexually assaulted. It doesn't stop with just the abuse that she suffered as something that was foundational to her character. Then you get Lestat taunting her.
But that's 100% in line with his character.
I don't disagree that it's out of line with his character. I'm not saying that. But what I am saying is they used that rape trope, which is they could have done anything else to make her have this.
It was weak and lazy on their part.
It was just lazy writing. And now, if you want to go... We want to do like a little feminist rant on this. Here's a young woman who is looking to perhaps explore sexual things or her sexuality. And the kibosh has been put on that because of the rape. And then she comes back and she's not allowed to go out into the world. She's curbed from going out in the world and exploring her independence and possibly her sexuality. She's just stuck now because of this rape. And I think it was just lazy. And it's too on the nose. It's like this warning. If you're a woman, you can't go out into the world. You can't go out and be autonomous because you're going to get hurt. Well, even if you're a vampire, even if you're a super powerful vampire, you're going to get hurt.
I don't think that's the showrunner's intention to use that as the story.
Authorial intent in this case to me doesn't really matter.
Right.
What matters to me is that they used a lazy plot device to keep her in line, and it's continuing to keep her in line with him commenting on it. I find the sexual assault now even more egregious than I did in the previous episode, but it's just something that is there. We're going to have to deal with it. It doesn't break the deal for me on this episode or this program. It's just an unusually lazy thing that the writers did. All right. So who do we have else? Character arc. Lestat.
Yes.
Lestat's character arc. Lestat just further exposed himself in my mind to be a narcissistic and potentially some other kind of mental health issues. But that does not negate the fact that I think that when he was telling his origin story, that's a terrible story.
Anybody can be a victim of someone else at any time. Just because you're a bad person doesn't mean you can't be victimized, because it doesn't in any way affect whether or not the crime was committed upon them.
I agree. And so his sharing his origin story, while I am certain true and while I am certain very traumatic for him, I kind of feel like he uses that story to get some sympathy. I don't know how much his origin story really affects him, or if he's using that, as Claudia certainly seems to think, as some kind of lever to trigger something for Louis.
Yeah, she calls it a sob story. She did not buy it. Yeah.
Now, we know that that's the story that Lestat presents as...
Right, but I don't think he's as broken up about it as he wants to make Louis and her try to believe.
Keep in mind, he didn't bring it up. She demanded that answer. And he had never raised it in the years that they've been together where he talked about Magnus. So if he was strategizing, which is totally possible, right? That's his thing. He did it on the spur of the moment. Because if he really just wanted to get this story out for sympathy, he would have told it earlier, I think.
No, he didn't try to use it as an excuse and say, look, I did this because of that. You're right. That's not how it happened. But I still think that he never wanted to talk about it because it just didn't matter to him. And now the only reason he is talking about it is because there's a payoff for him in doing so.
Sam Reed's performance in that scene was fantastic.
Of course, yeah.
And the way that it was shot, how it was like focus, you know, zooming in on him and then pulling back. It was just beautifully designed scene. Also, Louis says to him, did you have anything to do with Paul's death? And Joanne says, no, Louis, I did not. Joanne, because you were the one that brought up earlier in the podcast, not right. today, but earlier on in
episodes. I still think that while Paul was close to the edge, so to speak, I think Lestat was in his head and pushed him to the brink.
I think that Lestat definitely knew that Paul was suicidal and he didn't do anything to help.
At best, he knew.
At the best, he knew. At the worst, he maybe had something to do with it. The fandom, everybody wants to say absolutely not. Lestat himself said absolutely not. But everybody knows that Lestat's a big liar. Yeah, so
Lestat
I don't know
also said, I will kill Antoinette. Right. He said that also a lie. He will mix lies and truth as any good narcissist will. But I did not believe him even a little bit. Let's think about who Lestat is. He's in the process of pulling Louis into his orbit. He wants him to distance himself from his family, from his earthly businesses. He knows that Louis has a very close bond with his brother, who is troubled. As he said, he says he was longing for the flagstones. Do you really think, being who Lestat is, I'm sure he was eavesdropping. Do you really think he wouldn't say, okay, I'll just give him a little nudge? And given that Paul already believes that he's hearing voices, and Lestat is 100% capable of projecting a voice into his head, do you really think he wouldn't take that opportunity and just give him a little nudge? I think Lestat's character indicates he likely would. Did he actually or not? Maybe we'll find out. Maybe we won't.
But why bring it back up? Why have Louis now ask Lestat that question if they at least didn't want to make sure that that seed of doubt was planted in the viewers' minds at the very least?
Agree with you. I think that this is something that the writers are bringing up intentionally so that this is a part of it. And based on the book, if it's just the book, I would say no because right. of when Paul died. And also, as I was reading the book, I always read it to be that probably he really was seeing visions. If vampires are real, then all the rest of that, angels yeah. and devils and all of that could also be real.
Of course, in the book, I read it as there was some doubt as to whether Louis
there was Louis, or they remember they said that the slaves who saw it happen right. said that it looked like he was pulled off, yeah. like something pulled him off of right. the thing and he was pulled forward, propelled forward rather than like pushed yeah. or tripped.
Yeah.
Lestat is just proving to be Lestat. There's no pretense anymore that, you know, oh, maybe he's just a nice guy.
Well, I mean, how long did his controlling his temper even last?
Not long. Well, and he lost his temper again when Claudia wouldn't.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah. He lost his mind again when Claudia wouldn't finish the game. He wants control so badly. And it's really between Claudia and Lestat. And Louis is just this passive guy who's at this point.
Can somebody please take control? And can that control not involve, you know, destroying me? That would be awesome.
Well, when they started fighting as badly as they were, he just turned the music up.
Yeah, that was so.
He drowned them out.
Yeah, mm-hmm. he's so passive. And he's right now in his character arc is in a very unattractive Louis yeah. to me. Now let's talk about Daniel. In this situation, he does have even more of a character arc, but really for me, Daniel was kind of just helping to move along the rest of the story by yeah. asking certain questions. And one of the things that I thought was interesting is he goes through this. He's just heard how Louis was beaten half to death and all of this terrible argument and domestic violence. And he says, he didn't tell you he knew how to fly.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that, you know, he's a mortal, you know, he's a human. Of course, that's going to ring true. Keep in mind also, Daniel is hearing this. It's ancient history. It's like hearing somebody got beat up. I mean, if you heard somebody got beat up in 1930, you would do your best to empathize and try to feel real thoughts, but it's not going to be the same as if somebody got beat up last week.
Well, and Daniel also judges Louis. So Daniel is judging Louis. Yeah. Claudia is judging Louis for taking Lestat back.
Yeah.
Well, and he, you know,
we are judging Louis.
Do we judge Louis for taking Lestat back? That's a good question to ask in the conclusion. But I think that Daniel is definitely judging Louis and finding him wanting. I don't know if Daniel's really liking Louis all that much, because the way he says it, you took him back.
I mean, I think that's the normal reaction to hearing that somebody took back an abuser like that.
Yeah. Now,
it's not very empathetic because, of course, you know, that happens all the time. And it's much more difficult for the victims to break that chain than we from the outside think it should be.
He's mocking him. He turned to the doctor and he said, yo, you know, he's like, doc, this one's got, you know, whatever he said about Stockholm syndrome. Mm-hmm. And the doctor was like, I don't discuss my other patient, you know, whatever. Yeah, I'm not here. That was cracking me up when he said that.
Fareed said something. I don't discuss my patients
with my other patients. Yeah.
Louis is one of his patients?
Well, I mean, you know, HIPAA is a pretty serious thing.
Even in Dubai.
Louis talks about the vampire bond, how that's really tough to break. That's another excuse. Sure. Louis is just full of excuses. It's a vampire bond. You know, I didn't want to do that to Claudia on her day of her escape. There was a lot of imagery about slavery in this episode, explicit and implicit. They did a good job with that. But like Daniel, to me, although we saw him as young Daniel, and boy, did they ever cast a great actor young Eric Bogosian. It didn't really move for me. I don't know what's going on. I know that they're trying to, I think we're trying to figure out whether or not, like, is Daniel really closeted? Is he gay?
Well, I mean, he says in there, he's like, if something happens, it happens, right?
Yeah.
You know, I just think he had a fairly, you know, fluid sexuality. Yeah. It seems to me, at least.
Both you and Joanne and I, or all of us, have speculated over whether or not Daniel would take the dark gift if it was offered. And Louis mentions it in this episode. And he says, I would give it to you now.
Yeah.
A steady hand and the time to see your daughters get married.
And watch them grow old and die.
And get divorced. I mean, Daniel is very cynical at this point.
Well, yeah. That's his defining character trait is cynicism.
So at this point, you and I both said he wouldn't take it,
right?
I don't
think he would ultimately take it. Now,
I'm still stand by he will take it.
One change, though, we are seeing in Daniel, and my theory is that he was given some kind of mind-befuddling thing back then. Not just that he was just on drugs, but there's some kind of vampirically, they messed with his memory a little bit, and it's starting to come back now. Does that mean that his dream is reliable, a reliable narrator? We don't know that yet. We don't know shit about anybody's truthiness.
We don't know shit about fuck Marty.
We don't shit about fuck Marty. I don't know if he's dreaming or if it's real.
I don't know anything. I can't trust any of these bitches. No, I can't trust any of them.
It does seem like as the dream goes further and further along and his memories are coming back. So it's going to be very interesting to see how he deals with the revelation that he at least thinks Rashid was there.
Mm-hmm. You know what? I read online and I wish I wrote down the person's username that said it and I didn't, but they said that maybe Louis put that memory in Daniel's head for some reason. Could have gone that way too. It could have been a recall of an actual experience, or did Louis put that in his head for some reason?
That's a way more convoluted plot.
Who knows? This whole show's convoluted and fucked up.
Of course it is.
But he keeps calling Daniel our boy, which does lend credence to the idea that Rashid was there.
Yeah.
Our boy.
My initial take is I think Rashid was there. Could be wrong, could be wildly wrong, but I think he was there. It would be fairly clumsy, I think, to have him dream that and then say, oh, just a dream.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think he really was there.
Okay, let's pause here to hear from our sponsor for Body Count of the Week, Lestat Industrial.
Where there are rats, trash, and other vermin, there is sure to be disease breeding. Lewestadt Industrial offers a wide range of incinerators for all your commercial and residential needs. For large industrial sites, we recommend the Fenwick model, and for residential locations, we have a petite offering, the Claudia. We are headquartered in New Orleans and are happy to provide you with demonstrations between the hours of 7 p.m. and 4 a.m. Unconventional hours, we know, but this is the Big Easy. We don't wake up till the sun goes down.
So let's talk about the body count of the week.
Boy, Mark, this is going to be a long
The long count one. Is going to be very disappointed because he's only going to get to count to one. So now I think we all agree that it is likely that the train conductor did not survive that encounter. Do we all agree?
I agree.
And there were a couple other times I thought we might get another death. I was very nervous for the poor dog.
Oh, in the train. But me too. Never me heard too. A dog.
Lestat loves dogs.
And that's one of the, that was a Mastiff. That's like right. His hunting dogs from.
I thought it was a Cane Corso, but it could be a Mastiff. Yeah.
Yeah, he looked like
a pretty puppy either way. And I was like, if this bitch eats that dog, yeah. I'm going to ride it.
Lestat loves dogs. And you have to read The Vampire Lestat to get how much he loves dogs. Mm. So one. The train conductor.
Yes, but it was a spectacular death.
My gosh.
And it led to a sweet little bit of camp.
Yeah.
That really showed how far gone he is.
Well, I mean, that's a very vampire thing to do, though. They have no regard for humans for the most part.
No, but it was still really fucked the way he did that with his hand.
And that's not the,
He made it talk.
He did make it talk.
Tickets, but, please. I mean, tickets, please.
If you think back, Joanne, even to the movie, I mean, Lestat would taunt people who are dying, right? Tell them they're dying as they're dying type of thing. And he found it funny. He's not the only vampire that's like that in the Immortal Universe, where they take joy in the extravagant kill.
He came in wearing the guy's hat and he skipped as he was.
It was just, like you said, Christina, it was camp. That was like the one moment of camp we got. Yeah.
It was delicious, though. I had no issue with that. It was It was totally within his character.
Sure.
That's because Sam Reed is such a good freaking actor. He's just so good.
He really is.
The squelching sound was a lot.
There was like a lot of noise and the guy is screaming. The violence to me in this is tolerable.
That was horror filmy, though, for me. The way like you just hear the, you know, everything rattling around and then he opens it up and he's got the conductor's hat on and head on his hand. Like you said, he was kind of skipping and you could just see the life draining out of Claudia's face. Just the whole scene was pretty epic. So
he knows. And his mask was completely off there. He wasn't even pretending to play nice. That was crazy. Like,
I am a horrible, vengeful creature.
Yeah.
And you might want to get in line.
I will turn your bones to dust, he says. Yeah. And she's going to.
And he meant it.
He meant it, and now she's going to come for him.
Fuck boy,
I wouldn't want to be.
Find out.
Wouldn't want to be Lestat.
Polish immortal. Mm-hmm. Here it comes.
All right, so let's talk about our final thoughts.
I rarely ever have anything bad to say about it. I'm so obsessed with this show and this episode. Fantastic. I loved everything. It was hard to watch. Some moments were harder than even last week to watch. But overall, I thought it was a great episode. It moved the story along like it's supposed to do. And I loved seeing that side of Claudia. I cannot wait for next week.
I'm very excited for next week. There's some laziness in the writer's room around the rape trope, but I can forgive them for that. I guess I have to. Fantastic show. But like I said, I had to recalibrate. Previously, we talked about it being Anne Rice sort of turning things on their head when it came to vampires. Instead of us saying, these are vampires, how do we kill them? Now we are, as an audience, asked to think, here's what it's like to live as a vampire. That's really my big takeaway from the books. I have to start watching this series more as this is what happens in a toxic relationship. This is a relationship story, not so much the interior world of a vampire story.
I find myself at the end of every episode thinking, can you just give us a couple more minutes in 2022? Because that to me has become increasingly more interesting. Not that I'm not interested in the Lestat Louis story. Maybe it's just because, you know, you have at least a vague notion of how that's going to go, right? Mm-hmm. But we don't know really anything about where the Louis and Daniel story arc is going to go. So I'd keep finding myself saying, come on, just give me like 4 or 5 more minutes of Daniel and Louis to see how that is going to play out, because that's really where the mysteries are. But that's what I keep finding myself wishing for. And I think it's good that they don't give it to us.
They leave you wanting more.
Yeah, you don't want to have like this orgy of story just like laid in front of you all at once.
Okay, well, Joe, do you want to take us out?
Sure do. Thank you guys for listening to us tonight. We hope you enjoyed us. If you want, you can follow us on Facebook. We are Vampire Insider. You can also follow us on Twitter @Vampire_Insider. We invite you to follow our personal accounts as well. Christina is @ChristinaGenX. Mark is @MarkEatsPeach. And I am @JustBlockMe_1. Thank you guys. Have a great night.
Bye.
Peace out, Cub Scouts.
Good.
Cool. It's kind of the Nostradamus approach.
So
everything, and the ones that come true make you like
it, like
you
just say it.
Like it's my evil plan.
Do you know how to do a quatrain?
Yeah, like some in French.
Yeah.
A quatrain. Like okay. Isn't that what he said he was going to bleed him like? Isn't that what he said? I'll bleed you like a quatrain or something.
Probably not a quatrain.
No.
What was the word he used? It sounded like croissant, but it wasn't croissant.
Oh yeah, yeah. It was like a cicerone or something like that, right? Like,
yeah, it's a quatrain.
If you blend them like a quatrain, I don't really understand how that metaphor would work.
I don't know how it works with a croissant either, but...
Vampire Insider is a Conceptual Ozone LLC podcast produced and edited by Christina LaRusso. Please direct all business inquiries to vampireinsider@gmail.com. All rights reserved.